Good afternoon, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of April 20th before us. Would someone like to move the minutes of April 20th? Representative Detmer moves approval of the minutes. Any questions, concerns, changes to the minutes of April 20th? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of April 20th, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. We have two items of business today. That is the Environment Bill and the State Government Finance Bill. We're going to do the Environment Bill first. If we do not finish in time so that we can get the session at 3 o'clock, we will have to recess and come back after session. So with that, members, Chair McNamara moves that House File 846 be referred to the General Register. Chair McNamara, can you take us through your bill?
Thank you, Chairman and members, and to the audience. It's my pleasure to bring before you House File 846, which is the Omnibus Environment Natural Resource Finance Bill. It has some policy provisions in it also, and I'll walk through the bill. Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I first will use the spreadsheet. I'll walk through the numbers part, and then, Mr. Chair, I'll hit some of the highlights of the bill. I think I've got about 20 or so tabbed on my bill. Then I'll also real quickly just mention a number of House files that are in the bill if I didn't happen to have already hit them in that walkthrough, and then it would be my intention to stand for questions. I've got my backup behind me if they're needed, either while I'm doing my presentation or if there's members' questions. Does that sound like a good roadmap, Mr. Chair?
Sounds like a good roadmap, Chair McNamara. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll start with the first page of the spreadsheet. Mr. Chair, we did meet the target that you and leadership set for us, $244 million of general fund money, and I appreciate the additional consideration after the first round. As I've noted before, you and previous Chair Ms. Holberg, now Commissioner Holberg, were nice enough to give us some additional money when I was able to give such outstanding testimony of the needs in our committee. So thank you and leadership for that. It's appreciated for all those that will be impacted. First of all, Mr. Chair, I am missing my ruler to hold me online. Got a ruler? Sorry, I'm going to have to get a ruler from the very able Paige. Kevin, thank you. Mr. Chair, first of all, we do take the CLIF transfer. Those payments in 16 and 17 are not made. That's $29,683,000. And then we also bring back the payment in 15, which was $13 million and odd change. I'll get that when I come to it, but I wanted to mention it at the same time. We bring back the $1 million of 15 that was general fund money used for school trust buyout. That was subject to legislation in 16. We canceled that. We take the environmental funds, the fines that were before going to the environmental fund and the fines that were going to the remediation fund and send those to the general fund. We thought that would be appropriate that if folks are fine that go to the general fund and we take away the perception. I don't know that it's really reality, but the perception out there is that arguably the agency could fund some of it operations with fines. I think that's mostly a perception issue, not a reality, but we took that perception away. You'll see the CLIF transfer on line 33. Then if we go on, some of the other highlights I'd like to mention. Mr. Chair, one I'd like to talk about, and just to note, you'll see it on line 81, and I think I'll talk about it when we get to the riders in the bill. That's the PFC rider that we put back in the bill, and I'll talk about that when I go through the language. That's the it shows up as a cancellation in 18 and 19, and I'll explain that when I do the walkthrough of the bill. You'll see the money for House File 617 on line 82, the money for House File 616 on 83, and that's, for instance, that's the PCA's money there, but then it also shows up under Bowser where those agencies have the appropriate amounts. There is not a operating adjustment for PCA. We have language in the bill that tells them to take any operating adjustment they want out of a specific division within the agency where we think they have some non-essential people that could be those positions could be eliminated through attrition and other means. We do have the operating adjustments for DNR. I'm going to move on. Let's see what else I could touch on, Mr. Chair. We've got, okay, I'm just trying to hit the highlights in the spreadsheet, and I think it'll be best then if I move it. We've got the operating adjustment for DNR, and we've got the operating adjustment for Bowser in the bill. I think, Mr. Chair, I'm going to move to the bill, and then I'll hit a bunch of the money issues there, if that's okay with folks, as we go through the bill. Mr. Chair, the first thing I'd like to highlight in the bill is on page 4, line 18. Members of the audience and all the members on the committee, this committee probably knows it quite well, but if you look at the rider that we've added on 418 to 4.30, that's the $913,000 in the first year and again in the second year in the Environmental Fund for the important PFC biomonitoring in the East Metro, and then it talks about some other things the agency can do. So folks know that when this is ongoing money, it disappears into the, Mr. Chair, you'd be able to say it right, but is it the session law? It disappears into what I often refer to as the brown books. It no longer is in the green book. And then it doesn't need to be identified. If you go back, if you look, the 913 is actually part of, on page 3, line 11, of the $28 million, that's part of that money. And but then if the rider is ongoing, you don't see it each year. So I was like, where's the rider for PFC? We're doing it, aren't we? And then I was referred to by our ABLE staff, well, you got to go into the other book. And I said, you know what? Bring it back out here and put it on, because when we did that 4 years ago, it was a substantially different money. And I just think it's good for folks to know. And that would, and I can, at this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to mention, we've asked in the bill, at the end of the bill, we asked the department to give us a tally of all these riders. So when I come back in 2 years and I'm doing this bill again, or if there's a different speaker appoints, or this speaker, whoever appoints a different chair to the committee, they'll have the tools I think they need to make proper decisions. So I just think it's interesting for folks to realize that. Next one I'd like to highlight on page 9, line 6 through 28 is what's often referred to as the crumb rubber study. This was brought forward from Representative Clark to me, and it was of extreme interest. And not only Representative Clark, but some of our ABLE staff actually sent me some really troubling internet about the challenges with young ladies specifically that play goalie on soccer teams, and the some issues about potential cancer and such. So very important study there. I think there's some discussion the department thinks they might need more money for it, but they didn't have the study originally, but now it's such a good idea it might even need more money. So I think that's always good when stuff like that happens. Page 11, line 25 notes the agency self-transfer $8.1 million from the Milcat closed landfill. From the Milcat fund, that's the Metropolitan Landfill Abatement something account, Mr. Chair, that's got $8.1 million, has about a little bit south of $800,000 a year paid into it in the Metro. It's one-fourth of the $6.66 tax that has another acronym that probably shouldn't be mentioned in committee here, but folks will know which money I'm talking about. Well, maybe it's okay. It's sometimes referred to as the devil's tax. It's $666 a ton. And one-fourth of it goes in here. The point is, I think the important discussion that hasn't really been had is the two major landfills in that are actually have significant financial assurances to the department and to the state of Minnesota. And the question is, Well, if they have financial assurance from them, why are we also collecting $800,000 a year for financial assurance? And the troubling thing was there's been no need to spend that money recently and no plan to spend it in the near future, but yet it sits in an account that earns almost no interest, so it seems like not a very good idea. Mr. Chair, then I think I'll move. I have one more money issue I'd like to mention. I'm thinking that we may have some discussion. We have two things about the Minneapolis Park Board. We did not go as far as the governor did in his original budget, where he zeroed out the Minneapolis Park Board, not only of its general fund appropriation, but also out of his natural resources fund, the lottery and lieu money. We did not touch that, but we wanted to have a discussion about the general fund, and Mr. Rice, on behalf of the Park Board, laid out, I think, the reasonings of where the governor was coming from, and so now we have a better understanding of the why of that, and so that's in our bill still. And then, Mr. Chair, I think what I'll do is I think I'll move to highlight some specific policy and bills that have financial impact. And then the ones that I miss, I'll do a real quick walk through it, just the bill numbers, so if folks are wondering. On page 44, we have the beginning. It's mentioned a few different times, what I refer to as the Representative Uglem AIS fix. For those of you that know, and I don't think this would be considered a prop here or on the House floor, it's an 8x14 sheet of paper that shows the two stickers that you put on each side of your boat for the year of the boat. And then there's a signature thing that you put like in your glove compartment or carry in your pocket, and it says that I certify the information above is correct and there's a place to sign it. And we're adding, and that I have read and understand the AIS information below. And so it's a fix. It no longer will require the decal on the trailer, but actually will be acknowledgement right when you renew your boat license that you understand the importance of AIS. Great. Worked together with DNR, and Representative Uglem did a good job of coming up with the fix. So part of that fix also includes the Representative Drazkowski repeal issue. He repealed the existing sticker. The DNR policy bill is in here. That's mentioned in these page numbers in this area. Mr. Chair, we moved the county aquatic invasive species prevention grants over in our budget, in the environment budget. Basically, the grants stay completely intact as is. We fund them at 90% of their previous level to raise. We want to have raise the issue of some counties didn't know what they were getting the money for and weren't sure what to use it for. Most counties are doing a great job with it, and it's been a terrific program that we really look forward to coming forward. More language about DNR policy bill, a fix for the to clarify that the hoist at Lake Vermilion Sudan underground mine is a hoist, not an elevator, so that it's regulated a little differently and a little more common sense. Then, Mr. Chair, if we move on, there's about a dozen pages of what's called auxiliary forest, and if you're really bored, you could read that. But it just kind of modernizes. We haven't had any new auxiliary forest since 1974. It's originally 1921 legislation. We're kind of moving that into the 21st century.
Excuse me, Representative Kahn.
It would be helpful if you said what page you were on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kahn, the auxiliary forests go from 49.
Okay.
I might be on an old part of the bill. I'm sorry. Thank you. They start on 49, and then they go to about 62, okay. I think. 62, yes.
Okay.
Representative Kahn, I'm going to move to page 65. Okay. That's the first of some school trust land stuff. Basically, Mr. Chair and members, what we're doing is we're empowering the school trust director, assuming the governor follows law, which has not been followed for the last couple of years, and gets a school trust director appointed. We're giving that school trust director, whenever he or she is on the job, some additional authority to get the job done and follow the Constitution, which requires that school trust land be maximized financial benefit to those kids. So there's some stuff about condemnation of school trust land on page 65. We've got on page 67, Fabian Amendment deals with a little bit of the unfortunate turkey situation and making sure that we know farmers can harass ducks and geese to get them away from their flocks of chickens and geese, especially the free range. Real important for them to be able to harass waterfowl and get them out of the way. Trying to not go too slow or too fast, Mr. Chair. Am I kind of on the right pace?
Yeah. I think you're going okay.
Okay, thank you. We have on page, I think I'll go all the way up to about page 84. There was a lot of DNR policy stuff, and for the most part, that's part of the DNR before that, part of the DNR non-controversial policy bill. On page 84, section 88 is some Representative Howe language about groundwater, and there is an amendment to that, that where on line 84.8, we'll have an amendment later to change the word normal to low. That was at DNR's recommendation. A little bit about sealing a well, that we don't have somebody seal a well and then after the well is sealed say they have well interference. Again, on 84 is some of the runback parts of House File 1835 dealing with groundwater and the challenging issue on White Bear Lake, which we need to address. There's also some language consistent with some of the ideas Representative Dean brought forward about looking at augmentation for White Bear Lake. Basically, two issues with White Bear Lake potential solutions. One is being more conservative in our water usage around the lake, and then should we consider augmentation? Many folks forget that Lake White Bear Lake once had four huge pumps running until like in the 1980s. They were turned off, and since the lake has gone down quite a bit. A little bit of culvert language in section 91 on page 85 that Representative Green is. And then the issue that brought us some discussion on the floor the last couple days is section 92, the Fabian self-reporting issue with PCA. And then on 86 is one of the spots where Representative Fabian's House File 616 is mentioned in section 93. Section 94 is some of the Fabian 617, the peer review. And Mr. Chair, I did not mention, but those two bills have a fiscal note of about $12,600,000, but extremely important reform that kind of go hand in hand together. And so they're very important components of the bill as we deal with the significant changes potentially needed on wastewater treatment plants throughout our state and trying to understand what the cost implications are for local folks to deal with. Then I noted before the enforcement fines, that's on page 88, that the fines will no longer go to the environmental fund or to the remediation fund. They will go to the general fund. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chair, they were, I think it was 1.8 per year, the environmental fund, projected that will now go to the general fund, and then $300,000 per year were the projected fines for remediation fund. And you need to understand that those can vary quite a bit. Some years they've been significantly more than that, and some years they're less than that. Then, Mr. Chair, beginning on page 89 is language about the MPCA policy bill, and that's included in a few different spots. For the most part, that's mostly non-controversial. I should note on page 90, on the middle of the page, is the Representative Norness septic system permit. I think there might be a couple words, Representative Norness, that I thought we had complete agreement on this, and we might not quite have the exact language that you and the department agreed to, so we can look at that. Just something we need to fix, because we had agreed upon language, Mr. Chair. I thought we put it in, but it might be something I messed up on. More of the policy bill, and then at the bottom of, and Mr. Chair, apologize if I'm offending people sometimes in how I talk, but on the page, bottom of page 91, section 99 is what we refer to as the Fabian Fish Guts Amendment that would allow to be able to compost the remains from fish after you fillet them. Quite common, my practice at home, that was what my mom had us do when we skinned the bullheads and put them in the garden, and she said it grew the garden better. But I guess we got to get that figured out, so we count that as recycling or compost or whatever you call that. Let's see, we've got the Uglum Swim Club on the top of page 93. Swim Club is an acronym for some recycling efforts in the metro. Apologize for the acronym. Section 102 is a great new recycling competitive grant program that we put in our bill that'll get money out on the landscape and get things done. More of MPCA's policy bill on 94-95. Citizens Board repeal of their permitting jurisdiction. Keeps the Citizens Board real important. We keep them intact with their rulemaking authority, but we just repeal the one little thing they do about having the final say on permitting. It's been controversial. We're hoping we'll get the department to come around. Let's see here. Mr. Chair, I got about eight more tabs.
Okay, and then I know you've got an author's amendment, too, as I understand.
We've got that one we already talked about. Oh, Representative Moline's House File 1000 is on page 115. Representative Hoseman's Section 131 on page 116 deals with that single park in North Minneapolis that's been taking the interest off the top for the last 27 years in the amount of $14 million. We repeal that. And then, Mr. Chair, on page 117 is important, section 133, which is one of two important parts in the bill that we hope will deal with the governor's initiative to have more grass along running water. This would create water retention projects. Representative Torkelson often talks about holding water back to help with stream bank and near stream bank erosion. That's what Section 133 is about. Then also our additional money for SWCD, which I forgot to mention, is about $4 million in the bill. There's some language in one of those that mentions specifically how we want to continue to work, and I want to remind folks that Representative Torkelson has been working with all interested parties on that issue, and we think we're going to get a great solution at some point in time. Section 137 is going to be removed in an amendment. It's in my technical amendment, I believe. And then Article 3 begins on page 120, is the Game and Fish Bill. And, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if there's any question on the repealers. I'll have staff just walk through the repealers. Or actually, I know, Mr. Chair, I don't think that's necessary because we actually listed all the repealers right out. It's kind of been a pet peeve of mine to not list those. Mr. Chair, if you want, I'll move the amendments, then we'd have the bill in the shape I'd like, and I'm ready for questions.
Okay, why don't we start with your author's amendment, the A40 amendment. Chair McNamara moves the A40 amendment.
You said 4-0?
4-0, yes.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, this is mostly a technical amendment. Lines 1.2 and 1.3 deal with the off-road vehicle account. Line 1.4, I mentioned already, was that stream, trout stream, really normal didn't work because if you had 20% flow below normal, that might be no flow in the summertime, and we don't want that. So low flow is what we meant that to say. And then line 1.5 is deletes the McQuaid Harbor because that's actually a bonding issue, and so we not be doing bonding in this bill or dealing with bonding issues. So, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions on the A40.
Okay, discussion to the A40. Representative Murphy.
The bonding part of the bill has already been passed, though, for McQuaid Harbor. There's money, turnback money. And so we just wanted to declare where that turnback money would be spent.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I think we need to get that language in a future bonding bill to have it happen, because it was, it's one of those deals where the feds get a little time to give us the money, and then now they've given it back. I've dealt with this similar issue on veterans' homes. I have a veterans' home in Hastings. And so I think it has to be carried in the bonding bill. Mr. Chair, if I'm not mistaken, you used to chair the bonding committee. You probably know that.
Well, I did used to chair the bonding committee, but I'm not particularly familiar with this this issue. Representative Murphy?
Well, Mr. Chair, DNR has been meeting with some people in their areas, and they've talked about that money being able to come to them in Two Harbors and Knife River. And I understand from Senator Bach that they've also talked about Grand Marais. And these are all safe harbors. And the people are led to believe that we had to have this language delineated, saying that Knife River, McQuaid, and Grand Marais, Two Harbors, and Knife River were eligible, projects were eligible to receive that money. And so we put in the amendment.
Mr. Chair,
saying it has to be in bonding, but the bonding part is already over.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I agree with you, and I strongly support doing what we need to do, and we'll have to work with the bonding committee, because bond council said this language is a bonding issue. Specifically, Representative Murphy, I would need 81 votes on my bill if I kept it in there, for one thing.
Well,
so, Mr. Chair, sure I support the language, but I think it would be needs to be in a bonding bill.
So, Representative McNamara, just to be clear, you spoke to management and budget or bond council, and they told them that this would require you to have 81 votes for this bill?
Yes.
All right. Other questions on the A40 amendment? Okay, seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A40 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A40 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd like
Representative McNamara.
I'd like to move the A41, and I'd like to offer an oral amendment.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, if I could get members to go to line 1.7 and delete everything on the line after the word 4. And on line 1.8, delete everything before the word up. It would now read, if I start on line 1.6, Valley Groundwater Management Area for a contract with a hydrogeologic. So I'm deleting the words implementation of an alternative local planning option, comma, included. Those are the words I would like to delete. And if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I could incorporate them into the amendment, or do you want to deal with them separately?
No, I think you can incorporate that into the amendment if there's no objection. Representative McNamara incorporates that language into the A, or the deletion of the language he mentioned into the A41 amendment on line 1, page 1, line 7, delete everything after the word 4. Page 1, line 8, delete everything before the word A. Representative McNamara. Representative Wagenius.
I have a question on the amendment. Is that appropriate now?
Why don't you describe what the amendment does, Representative McNamara, and then we'll take a question from Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, there's been some folks that, as we work with DNR, and Mr. Chair, I want to say we've really developed a terrific relationship this session with DNR and working on some really tough issues around groundwater monitoring and such. And I want to thank them. They worked very busily last week. In current law, we don't allow water appropriation permits to pump in the month of April. And we had a number of folks throughout Minnesota with crops already in the ground and alfalfa that were in dire need of water. And DNR issued instructions just on Friday, late Friday night, prior to our rain on Saturday and Sunday, that allowed farmers to water the last 2 weeks in April. Doesn't allow them to pump any more water this year. they have to conserve any water that they water now will have to be part of their total target. We do deal in our bill with allowing a wider time frame for folks to water, but we do have in the bill that we do not want them water just to build up ground moisture. That would be an unreasonable use. So that said, to the amendment, Mr. Chair, this is addresses some folks are nervous that there's a perception that folks might just pick a specific time frame to look at the years when you look back. You might begin, say, not in 1987 when it was dry, but you might begin in 1990 when it was wet. This is just let's be consistent in how we look kind of broadly. Just ask for a little bit of a study by an outside hydrologist, and we're working with DNR on the issue. It just came forward at the last minutes this morning before me, so it's an ongoing discussion. It's not set in stone, Mr. Chair, and at that point, Representative Wagenius, I would certainly stand for questions on the amendment.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bonanza Valley covers a number of different counties. Is there a geologic atlas for each of the counties in the Bonanza Valley area?
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I don't know if the geologic atlas is done for all the counties. I actually don't know the exact counties in the entire Bonanza Valley, so I wouldn't be able to answer that. I don't know that.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, the data that we need, if you think there's data that needs to be had, comes from the geologic atlases.
Could you repeat that, Representative Guinness?
Representative Guinness, could you repeat your statement?
Our understanding of groundwater comes from geologic atlases. You can hire lots more contractors to look at whatever, but until you have the basic data, you don't have anything, or you don't have a lot. And so one of the reasons, well, let's just leave it with that. I noticed in your clean water recommendations there's no money for new atlases or to continue our atlas program. And it does seem to me that it'd be wiser to spend money developing the basic understanding of the aquifers underneath the Bonanza Valley rather than doing something like this. So not knowing whether there are atlases there, I think, is a major problem with this amendment. I mean, it can go on. It doesn't make any difference. You can't. Data that does not come out of the air. We can spend $100,000 and not get much.
Representative McNamara, I noticed that the words Bonanza Valley Groundwater Management Area are capitalized. Does that have a specific designation somewhere? I believe it does.
Mr. Chair and members, it does. It's one of the three groundwater management areas, and they are specific to a map. And before we get to the House floor, I can have that map available and show which counties are included and which counties have had geologic maps.
All right. Other questions to the A41 amendment? All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A41 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The A41 amendment is adopted. All right. I am not aware of any other amendments. Representative Hillstrom, I had you having a question, I believe, for the bill. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't really a question, but more of a statement. Section 131 actually takes the money from my park. So I'm hoping that between now and the time that this goes to conference and comes back from conference, that in addition to the bill getting much better, as I can't vote for it in its current form, that you repeal or you leave off Section 131. That is both Representative Mullery and my park, and specifically it's where Barway Collins was located. And so that is the money that we've used to keep that park in good repair and serve all of the metro area with the connection.
Okay. Representative McNamara, Representative Wagenius.
Well, this is the follow-up. Did she get her question answered?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom's right. This park is in North Minneapolis and continues north of North Minneapolis in Brooklyn Center. And it has had a special earmark for the last 27 years and has earned over $14 million off the top, and all the other metro parks have not shared in this money. And so it has been treated uniquely for the last 27 years.
A representative, Wagenius, and then Kahn.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. When some of the sections you skipped over were DNR water sections, and it looked to me so.
Oh, okay. Representative Wagenius, I guess Representative Kahn wanted to follow up on this issue. Are you okay with that?
Perfect.
Okay, Representative Kahn on this issue.
Well, I have a certain amount of familiarity with this because I was working on this thing at the time that we did it. And the issue, which is still true, is that this is the section first of Minneapolis, but now also moving into the nearby suburbs of the metropolitan area that has the highest levels of poverty, has the lowest levels of park usage, has the lowest amounts of acreage of parks per kid, and there was very good reason for doing this, and those reasons still apply. It is still an area that is much less well taken care of than, let's say, the chain of lakes or even the Central River District further down, which is in my district is, and there is still good reason to be able to put more money into making these parks more amenable to the use of the children who have really been deprived of a park experience.
Other comments on this particular issue? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am concerned about the cut to the Minneapolis parks, not only for the reasons that Representative Kahn mentioned, but these are really regional assets. We have so many people from even outside Minneapolis that come to use our parks. They are regional in nature. And, not to mention all of the benefits for our youth, whether it's the basketball leagues or the softball leagues and after-school programs. I mean, it's just such an extensive set of benefits that this has, for our city. But I also want to emphasize not just for Minneapolis but the region. In my district, we have the chain of lakes, and I can tell you that on a beautiful spring or summer day, many of the people that are using those parks are from outside the city of Minneapolis. So we're not just cutting Minneapolis, you're really cutting a really critical regional asset. So I'm very concerned about that, and I hope that as this bill moves forward, we can make sure that we continue our investment in the Minneapolis park system.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay, now for DNR Waters.
Yep.
Okay. All right. As I look through the sections on DNR Waters, it appears to me that you're giving DNR a lot more responsibility without more money. And maybe there are fiscal notes that I'm not aware of, so that's what I wanted to go on to talk to you about. And I'll start with Section 84, which you seem to be describing a little bit earlier when we were talking about the Bonanza Valley. I kind of like the amendment in one respect because it does acknowledge global warming and that we will be having agricultural crops up until November 15th. However, on the next line, 82.5 to 82.6, the commissioner must determine whether the appropriation endangers a domestic water supply. So there's just simply more responsibility here for the commissioner.
Right in your way.
And was there a fiscal note attached to this particular provision?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, that's actually current law.
Representative Wagenius.
I understand that. But you're adding 45 extra days of potential pumping. And so that's the question. So the commissioner has to look at the 45 days will be the end of the season when you're likely to have less water than at the beginning of the season in the spring, where you're going to have more water. That's just the way life is. So the basic question, was there an additional fiscal note on this?
Chair McNamara.
Mr. Chair, this actually is a water conservation measure, because what happens here now is we do not increase the total amount of water available to be pumped. So a producer that wanted to be able to pump in October or November, with the possibility that we would have a dry October or November, would need to be more efficient throughout the earlier growing season to allow some additional water for later in the year. So the thoughts are that in a normal year, this would reduce the amount of water, but it can't increase the amount of water. The limits in their appropriation permit are still applicable.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, unfortunately, that's not how groundwater works. In the fall, the water may be way down, and the next-door neighbor's well may be way down. It's because it's fall. It's not spring when there's a lot of water available. So even though a permit may be for a certain level, by extending the time to the driest of the seasons, there is going to be some issues, some with endangering domestic water supplies, which is always the big issue here. So I think I hear that there is no fiscal note. So I will go on to the next one, which is section 85, which is right now we have once through cooling, and we say, no, you can't do it. And this says, oh, yes, you can. So the commissioner may issue a permit for a system in existence prior to 2015. Here, since there's a total reversal, and a commissioner may issue a permit, or we need rulemaking. Was there a fiscal note on the rulemaking for this? I know that they have the authority. I'm talking about the dollar.
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding this is not my section. It's part of DNR policy, House File 1329. This is a fix from a mess up in a previous bill.
Representative Wagenius.
Nonetheless, whatever, I don't know where it came from or whatever, it requires rulemaking. So if you're going to have a commissioner issue permits for certain circumstances, in order for it not to be arbitrary and capricious, we need rulemaking. And I'm hearing that there is no fiscal note on that. So I'll go on to the next one.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. I'd suggest maybe you meet, if you have concern about that section, I don't have any problem taking it out. It's not my deal. But it was a DNR initiative that they said was affixed to a snafu in a previous bill. So maybe you want to check with them and understand exactly what it is, but it's my understanding it's to fix something to make sure that the people are that are doing these using the thermal groundwater for heating their home aren't breaking the law, even though they're doing a good thing. And so that's what the fix is about. And it might be good if you visit with them to understand it.
Super.
Representative Wagenius.
On section 87, this is probably the most, the second most expensive thing I saw here. So if you are, when somebody applies for an application for groundwater appropriation, and they do not have to do 8314, an inventory of the wells around. Now, this is basically so you're not taking water that belongs to your neighbor. So if the person asking for the permit doesn't have to do this, then DNR will have to do the work. So the question is, was there a fiscal note here on how much it would cost the DNR to do the work?
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, current well drilling policy has been in place for a number of years, requires when well drillers drill a well, they send that information to the Department of Health. So instead of having someone go to all their neighbors within a mile and a half and ask them, I use the example of you got Jane and Johnny living in a home they bought from Grandma, and all they know is there's a little blue pump down in the basement that makes the shower work, and then a neighbor that lives a mile and a half away comes and says, how deep's your well and what kind of well it is, and they're like, I'm not sure. You can go downstairs and look. But the reality is where the records are is at the Department of Health, and we're just asking DNR to access those electronic records from Department of Health instead of having the neighbor go and create. We believe there'll be significant cost savings in no longer having to find all this hard data, and we think DNR probably would rather just look at the electronic ones. They're working with this on working with us on this issue to see just exactly how it should be worded.
Representative Wagenius.
Nonetheless, this is a pretty large expenditure. I don't think all of this is electronic right now. That'd be good. I'm hearing that there is no fiscal note on this section. It's just these extra responsibilities to DNR without money that I'm looking at. Let's go next. The next one I saw was Section 88, and this is another one of the big fiscal notes. How do you determine a 20% harmful effect? That takes a lot of monitoring. Our monitoring system in this state is not robust. We know it needs to be robust. But as I understand it, this doesn't provide for the additional monitoring wells or for a way for DNR to determine the 20% harmful effect on low flow levels. So am I taking it there's not a fiscal note here either?
Chair McNamara?
No. There is not.
Okay, this section the section 89 is probably not, but I'm concerned about that, but we can talk about that on the floor. So let's go to section 112. And I understand from folks that this has been nicknamed the Offit Amendment. And essentially it requires a discretionary EIS. I'm going to have to find a page here.
Do you have a page, Representative Wagenius, for what you're looking at?
I am looking for it.
106, is it?
106. Okay. So this is lengthening the time for a EAW or an EIS, something I thought we were trying to collapse rather than lengthening. But in this case, once that 90 days is done, that stops any action that the DNR can do. So if there's a problem that they're requiring this EAW or EIS for, that problem just continues to exacerbate for 90 days. So do we have any idea what the fiscal impact will be of a cleanup of a problem that is going on for an extra 90 days?
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, to answer your question, I would need to make the assumption that DNR or PCA hasn't contemplated for 90 days that they're considering a discretionary EAW. It's my understanding that only two discretionary EAWs have been done by DNR that they know of. I don't know if you want to say in recent history or ever. They didn't. So I don't want to say ever because maybe sometime before any of us they did one. One of them was done in cooperation with the proposed party, and the other one was not. I think it would be a good idea to let the party know that you're contemplating an EAW and what are the issues around that, instead of calling them a couple hours beforehand and saying we're going to deliver devastating news to your company. The example on the North Shore, DNR proposed to the mining company they were interested in an EAW, a discretionary EAW, and the affected party said, why don't we sit down and figure out how to do that? And they did that. In the other one, the affected party has been through EAWs before and was fine with them. So we're just saying, why don't you let people know you're thinking about it, and maybe you can work it out. You won't have press releases that are less than truthful, and you'll be working with them in a positive way. I certainly hope that somebody's not using a discretionary EAW and is thinking today they're going to issue it tomorrow. There's more involved than that, and to think that they didn't spend 90 days. The one you're alluding to, DNR acknowledges that they contemplated it for more like 9 months. And it's interesting that they gave them a couple hours notice, even though they were working on it for 9 months. So we're just thinking, why not have a little talk and a conversation, and maybe you can work it out and move the thing above board and do it in a positive way instead of aggressive, combative. I'm not that personality. I'd rather see people get along and work it out.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Well, if I could respond to that, I mean, if you're doing a discretionary EAW or EIS, it's because there's a problem up there.
Pardon me, I can't hear you, Representative Wagenius. Okay.
If you're going to do this, it's because there's a potential problem out there. And so once you put the notice out, everything stops. So for 90 days, a situation can get worse and worse. And a lot of these situations, the taxpayer ends up paying for. So I hear that there's no fiscal note on this one, too. And one of the things in this one, once you do a discretionary environmental review, you can get a citizens petition coming in here. It actually may make this whole thing a lot more expensive. So let me go to the next one.
Excuse me, Representative Wagenius, if I could, I know Representative Hackbarth is back and he had a question before, and if you're going to switch to another subject, perhaps I could have him ask his question and then come back to you.
It's fine.
That'd
with
be
me.
Okay. All right. Oh, you don't have a question anymore. Okay. All right. I just and I guess I should, as long as I'm breaking and talking here. You know, I guess I should mention, members, I mean, it is the prerogative of the committee to make a judgment as to what sort of capacity an agency has to write rules and absorb work. And, you know, clearly there's a limit, but it's also the situation that we don't have to have a fiscal note on every single last section in a bill either. Representative Wagenius.
Well, it just happens that all of these are in one section of DNR's work. It's not spread out, so there's a pile on in one section. And when you're, particularly when we do not have, if we had monitoring wells all over the state, then some of that might be easily done, but we don't. We haven't spent the money for that. I don't. So you are adding a substantial burden in one area. So here's a different.
Go ahead, Representative Wagenius.
Okay, here's a different area. Now I'm on section 133 and page 117. And this is asking the agencies to develop proposals for significant, I'm on line 177 and 8, significant large-scale projects that protect flood water retention and water quality improvements, et cetera. It seems to me that the agencies to do this, since they are large-scale projects, should have an appropriation to do this, and I am not seeing an appropriation here.
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, Section 133 allows the Commissioner of DNR, in cooperation with Commissioner Fredrickson from Ag and Commissioner Stein from PCA and Director Jaski from the Board of Soil and Water, along with Commissioner Landwehr and other interested parties. They could be environmental groups, ag groups, Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, to come together to develop a proposal for significant large-scale projects that would provide water retention. Mr. Chair, we spend $300 million plus a year on the legacy money. We spend a lot of it to clean up our water, to create habitat, and make this place a better place to live, work, and play. It's great money. I think it's some of the best money the state spent. I know all 134 members of the House don't agree with that, but there's an opportunity that the governor has brought forward with his initiative to clean up our waters, and Section 133 is a really, really important part of that initiative. It does not talk about general fund spending. This is money that would come from Lessard Sam Outdoor Heritage money, LCCMR, and clean water money. It's a great project. We've really had terrific work with the agency. Representative Torkelson is working daily with different groups, ag groups, environmental groups, the agencies. He's meeting every couple days with the agencies. And part of the idea is where the governor raised the level on drainage and the need to have grass along the drainage. Also, we're recognizing the need to hold water back on the land, and it's something that we've got a great opportunity, and that's what this proposal is. All it is waiving the deadlines, because May 11th is the deadline for Lessard Sams, and we want to give them a couple extra days. Mr. Chair, we're anticipating we may not quite be done on May 11th, a few days, give or take. So just in case we're not done on the 11th, we give them a couple more days to get the work done, and we're excited. There's a project out in Traverse County where the Red River Valley did an example of this, where voluntarily with a local county, working with the county, voluntary landowners selling, great project. It's a kind of project that I believe Representative Wagenius, Representative Draskowski, and myself can come together and say, this is the kind of thing we like to see. Voluntary, don't hold the taxpayers anything extra, but get really good stuff done with people that want to participate. So I'm excited about the project and hope we can talk about it more.
To that point, Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McNamara, I just wanted to clarify, did you say that legacy money was some of the best money spent?
Chairman
McNamara and I both agree on that.
All right. Representative Wagenius.
Well, let me follow up if I can, Mr. Chair. First of all, it's not permissive. It says on line 117.7, it shall develop proposals. Now, I don't see the buffer in here issue, but am I taking from what you're saying that you're thinking that this is the money from Lessard Sams and Clean Water Council and LCCMR shall pay for the buffer program? Is that what I'm hearing? And then is it, when I first read this, because it was flood retention, I was thinking it was for the Red River Valley. Is that not your intention?
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Two questions there.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll address the first one in regards to the governor's initiative to get grass alongside perennial waters. This is not for that part of it. Our discussions with the administration have been, when I say our, Representative Parkinson, and my discussions with the administration have been, we believe the governor addressed the really important part of grass along moving water. but he didn't address the water retention part and the stream bank and near stream bank erosion that projects like Section 133 would take care of. So we think there's kind of a two and potentially threefold issue here. This is one of the three parts of the issue, and that would be large-scale water retention projects, which have been done on the Red River successfully. And the Red River, as folks should know, is relatively flat. So holding water back on flat land is a little more challenging than actually we think the place where this is really possible. And Representative Wagenius has often brought up that since the Carlson administration, we've spent $1 billion to clean up the Minnesota River Valley. And for the most part, it's been a failure. And she's right. And this is an effort to do the right thing in a large-scale way and actually make a difference in the Minnesota River Valley. We think the best opportunities are in the Minnesota River for Section 133. We don't identify that because we didn't want to limit it, but we think that's the best opportunity.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I'm understanding better now what this language is getting at, if it's getting at the Minnesota River. And it's essentially using Lazard Sam's Outdoor Heritage money to buy land along the Minnesota River. So is this then for wetlands along the Minnesota River? It doesn't say wetlands, but that's what I am inferring from what you're saying.
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, they would be large-scale water retention projects that, yes, they would be wetlands.
So
Representative Wagenius.
If I could follow up again. So this is, so two questions come to mind then. One is, since we have used general fund money and bonding money for floodwater retention, are we now using the outdoor heritage money to essentially supplant bonding and general fund money? I think that's what I'm hearing. That would be the same thing for clean water money and LCCMR money. Don't you think we have a supplanting problem here?
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, actually, I didn't want to wait until the traditional bonding year of next year, or I would have included bonding in the language here. I didn't want to tie this up and lose a year. So I used money that was available now. So these folks, the deadlines for these projects are May 11th for Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and I believe it's in July for LCCMR. I don't know that for sure, but I think those are the days. But these kind of projects could conceivably also use bonding money, and you're right, historically they have. It's my idea that we would be able to use, we're currently buying lots of land with Lassard Sands and LCCMR. We're doing lots of easements. We're doing lots of work on public lands we already own, and I believe that could be any of these. These don't have to be only ownership. They could be easements where a private property owner says, you know what, I've got a relatively large water moving through my land, and I've got good fall on my land. We could have a huge water retention project, and all of a sudden somebody that wants to have a place to play or fish or hunt ends up with potentially 300-400 acres of great land, and it might be an easement where he or she takes care of that, or it could be one that we turn into a wildlife management area, or it could be existing state land that we actually rehabilitate and change with some structures. So all of those would be possibilities here, and it would be my hope that we would in the future also use bonding as part of this initiative.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I think we share a common desire to clean up the Minnesota River Basin, but I don't think it's listening to what you're after. I don't know that it's practical for these agencies to come up with large-scale projects in a very short time frame. I mean, this is, otherwise you're just doing what we've always done, which is these little scattershot projects that don't have any major impact, which has been one of the problems we've had with our spending for our water money, and mainly our water money. So my two issues there were we should be giving the agencies some money to develop these things if they're going to be really significant and have meaningful impact on our waters, and I worry a lot about the supplanting. So if I could go on, Mr. Chair, there are a couple other issues. Parks and trails have been brought up as an issue. I know that, but I would like to just mention that because you didn't come up to the governor's level in parks and trails, I'm understanding that there are going to be a lot fewer camping nights and a loss of revenue to DNR, around $2 million. And I wondered if that was factored into your budget.
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wagenius, if I'm not mistaken, I need to go to Parks and Trails, but I think I know it by heart. If I'm not mistaken, their request was maybe you're. Do you know what line you're on, Representative Wagenius? I think their request was $3.5 million, and did we give them $2.1? I'm not on the right line. They requested 3.6 in each year, and we gave them 2.1. And I've had a great relationship with the DNR, and I don't want to tarnish it, but we did give them $2.1 million in each year for parks and trails, new money, and gave them their operating adjustment, and I would leave members to determine for themselves how many parks you would need to close if you got 2.1 of new money each year and we're not buying any new state parks. But we are opening the newest one on Lake Vermilion, which I support.
Representative Wagenius.
I think we can ask DNR for... parks have been... we have a lot of parks in the state. It's not cheap to run them. So I think we can wait for the floor to see what these funding levels will actually mean for folks and our citizens who use our parks. So there were, I noticed you also had, there's just a couple more things, Mr. Chair. In the trout streams, you are saying that DNR, can't designate any more trout streams. I'm assuming it's in the future. You're not taking away their designations that they already have, but it's future designations. Is that, am I reading the language correctly?
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, we think that we might be helping them. They noted that sometimes the DNR commissioner has trouble with the politics of getting a trout stream designated. We we now take that to the legislature, and the legislature will be able to get that done, and the DNR commissioner won't have to get into the politics of it. It is ongoing, not looking back or current situation.
Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Well, knowing that we will have to do a substantial amount of additional work, then that would be coming into the legislative budget, and I trust that that's something we're thinking about as we're cutting the legislative budget. The last thing I want to talk about, I think, is in this time of surplus, taking money from the closed landfill fund. And there are two issues here. One, and the biggest one for me, is you are saying that future generations will have to pay for the cleanup of waste created by past generations. This is an intergenerational shift. It happens a lot in what we do. It's just not fair. And so there's this fairness issue here. The second issue I was looking at is that you're spending one-time money. They're spending this landfill money one time, and then I look forward to the need for general fund, and your tails are enormous because way over the governor, $10 million over the governor, because you've spent one-time money and then would have to, for ongoing, have to use general fund. So I just note that for the record, that there's well over $10 million more in tails as a result of this shift. Well, I don't even know if it's a shift. It's a money grab and shift. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think there's some just the things in this bill that need to be thought about. I can't support the bill.
All right. Any other discussion to the bill or questions for Representative McNamara? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a lot of concerns about the bill as well, and at this point in time, I don't plan on supporting it either. You know, Representative Wagenius talked about the fiscal impact areas of the bill where we need or should have had fiscal notes. We had comments by Representative Hillstrom and Kahn about the impact on the parks, just to mention a couple of things. But one that I wanted to bring up, and Representative Wagenius touched on it near the end of her questions and comments, and I'd be interested in comments from the author, Representative McNamara, and that is the closed landfill account, the transfer of the funds. And before somebody reminds me, they might say, well, Representative Carlson, when the DFL was in control a few years ago, you used the landfill account as well. And that is somewhat a true statement, but there are a couple of important facts to keep in mind. One, we had a huge deficit. If I recall correctly, it was not a proposal that came out of the legislature initially. It came out of the administration at the time. And Senator Cohen and I agreed to do it, but we did insist that the language include that they would receive interest and any other income that they would have received had we not transferred the funds. And Representative McNamara, you're transferring the funds out, and I guess I view that as kind of a violation, if you will, of the law that was passed at the time, the agreement that was reached, House, Senate, and administration. And if you could comment on that, because we're talking about a very significant number here. The payment that was made last year while I was still in your role as Chair of Ways and Means, MNB paid, I think it was $51 million. Back to the fund, and that included the interest and other earnings. The other earnings meaning that that money was would have been invested. And so the environmental community at the time then I think they perhaps were a little nervous that that agreement might not be kept about the interest and other earnings, but it was. The payment was made. And now we're going back on that. So if Representative McNamara could comment on why he's choosing to do it the way he is. And I think you're putting it, then the liability onto the general fund, if I'm reading this correctly. And we attempted to avoid to have it as a separate fund with separate earnings.
And before I recognize Chair McNamara on that, Representative Carlson, I guess I just want to say I've talked to Representative McNamara on this, and I guess I want to be clear, we're not taking the principle of the closed landfill fund. What the bill is doing is taking the extra earnings that the landfill fund has earned, as I understand it, and that is something that we normally haven't done when we've repaid other funds that say during time of deficits we've borrowed money from. But let me recognize Chair McNamara on that issue.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And many of the audience might not understand what Representative Carlson and Representative Wagenius are talking about. In 2010, Representative Wagenius and Representative Carlson took basically the entire Cliff amount. Not only whatever earnings it had, but they also took the principal and used it for other purposes. So they left it basically with zero in it. I think a couple million came in the interim. Unfortunately, those millions didn't even get invested. They just sat over at the agency, kind of like leaving a $3-4 million in your checking account and not realizing you should put it in investment. So for a number of years, unfortunately, when the state investment board was earning 20-some percent 1 year and the upper teens the next, millions of dollars was sitting over at PCA not earning any investment. So what we did, as you alluded to, Mr. Chairman, we didn't go as far as either the Senate is in their bill that they're in the process of passing, I don't know, yesterday, today, tomorrow, whenever. They grabbed more than we did. It's unprecedented that you would pay back potential stock earnings. I have the question, so what if, like happened in 08 and 09, and the market would have went down 30%? Would we be here saying, oh, we don't owe you the $60 million we took, we only owe you $47 million, and so that's all we're going to send back to you. So I think we should be consistent in our tradition. The other thing's important for folks to know, there's no plan on how to spend this money. There's nothing in statute, nothing in law that says what it will be spent on after 2020 when it becomes available. Statute says it can't be spent until 2020, but it doesn't say what it'll be spent on. I did not take any of the principal. I thought that would not be correct. It was done in the past. I don't think it's the right thing to do, and I refuse to do that, and certainly hope that we don't succumb to the Senate and do that. I think that would be unfortunate. That would be a mistake. Representative Wagenius mentioned that our tails are larger by $10 million. I need to acknowledge our tails are larger, Mr. Chair. We moved $20 million from the tax bill into this bill, and that's recognized as ongoing money. That's the county AIS money, and so our tails are larger because of that. Sometimes you do things here just because it's good government, and it's the right thing to do, and I think AIS should be in the environment bill, not in the tax bill.
Okay, Representative Carlson and then Wagenius.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, just a bit of a conclusion to that part of my comments, at any rate. When we did that, yes, we used the funds, but we guaranteed, basically, we signed an IOU, if you will, by the state of Minnesota by putting it in law, that we would pay back the principal plus any interest and other earnings because that money had been invested. So I'm not sure it's a good example to say had the stock market gone down, that would have been a risk whether we used the funds or not. But we did guarantee that the principal would be paid back plus the interest and other earnings. That was an agreement. There were a lot of parties that watched that very closely at the time, and we did pledge that the state of Minnesota would make sure that the fund was held whole. And we don't know what the costs are going to be relative to the closed landfills. If I recall correctly, I think there was a court case that, and there's a timeline that we had to follow. It's been a while since I was involved in that issue. It was part of a supplemental bill, by the way, that we're talking about a house file that some of the people here might remember even the number of. But there was a certain event back at the early days of our country that took place that matched the house file number. I think it was 1812. Mm. Some maybe remember that. But at any rate, that was a comprehensive, huge bill that we were dealing with, a huge budget deficit that we had to resolve. But we did pledge that we would pay it back, and that's what I see as unraveling here. And we don't know what our liability will be with these landfills. That was another part of the issue at the time. We wanted to make sure that we did have the money there one way or the other, because there is a huge potential liability with these closed landfills. But I'll yield, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, to where I think you already did recognize Representative Wagenius, but I would encourage a no vote on the bill.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Just one more thought on the closed landfill issue. I mean, you said, you know, there was like extra money there. That assumes that the money going into this fund is sufficient to cover costs forever, for managing these closed landfills. That's not a good assumption. We don't have enough money in that fund right now to do that particular job, because we have over 100 landfills. The reason they were closed in the first place, and you may not have been here at the time, I think Representative McNamara probably was, is that these landfills were leaking into the groundwater, and they were going further and further out. So there were lots of lawsuits to try to figure out who was going to pay for them. And we solved the problem by saying, okay, the state's going to take care of this. We'll cover them up, which will keep the stuff from moving out so fast. But it's still moving out. We're monitoring wells around each one of these landfills. This is getting into drinking water sources. Drinking water is going to become more and more of a scarce resource in Minnesota because so much of it's polluted right now. So to tell the, since there is no plan to pay this back, to tell the next generation, you have to take care of a problem created by the last generation, I think is simply unfair.
Chair McNamara.
I renew my motion that 846 be sent on to the floor.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, I've been looking through the spreadsheet and through the bill, but on the North Shore, we have a lot of people that really respect the work of the people that work at the French River Coldwater Hatchery. Is there enough money in this bill to continue supporting their activities and programming?
Chair McNamara.
Representative Murphy, we included the full governor's recommendation for operating adjustments in the next biennium for the DNR.
Thank you.
Okay. Chair McNamara, see no further discussion. Chair McNamara renews his motion that House File 846, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. House File 846, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I'm going to take a five-minute recess while we get ready for the next bill. All right, members, I'm going to bring us back from recess so we can get started here. And first of all, the Senate has passed the state government finance bill. It is before us, so I'm going to move that Senate File 888 be referred to the General Register. And then I'll move that House File 495 as a delete all amendment be inserted in place of the Senate language. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor of substituting House File 495 into the Senate File 880 language, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The House language is substituted. And we have some other amendments, but I think at this point we'll first let Chair Anderson go through the bill. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have Ms. Roberts from Fiscal Staff and Mr. Shepherd here. I asked them to do a quick overview for you, and at this time I'd like to turn it over to them.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. The spreadsheet that you have before you has, just to point out, the first three pages are the general fund only summary, and then the detailed tracking follows that. And I'm going to just hit the changes in the interest of time. For the legislature itself, the funding, recommended funding level is a 5% reduction for the House, the Senate, and the LCC. The LCC also recommendation also includes some increased funding for the legislative office of the legislative officer auditor, excuse me, and the revisor's office. So that makes the net change for the LCC 4.6% increase. For the constitutional officers, all of those offices received a 6.5% reduction in their general fund appropriation. For the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, the bill has a 10.7% reduction to the board's operating budget, and it also eliminates the public subsidy program. The Investment Board is at base level funding. The Office of Administrative Hearings has an increase of 17.4%, and this is some increases for dealing with data practices violations and campaign finance violations. Minute Services is at base level funding of $4.8 million. The majority of the funding for this office is through chargebacks to agencies. Within Department of Administration, the overall reduction to the department's programs is approximately 8.5%. Within the department is also included the grants to public broadcasting, and you'll see that they have a 25% reduction to their general fund base. Moving on to Minnesota Management and Budget, there is an 8.5% reduction to Minnesota Management and Budget, and there is some funding included that you'll see in the bill for Representative Mack's return on investment proposal. That's $312,000. I'm sorry, I missed the CAP board, the Capital Architectural Planning Board, and that board received a 3% reduction to its general fund base. Moving on to the Department of Revenue, which is the largest agency in this committee, they had a $1.8 million reduction. The Minnesota Racing Commission and the Gambling Control Board are non-general fund agencies, and the Gambling Control Board is funded at the base level. Currently, the Racing Commission did receive a small increase of $182,000. Again, these are two boards that are funded through either license fees or regulatory fees. Moving on to the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, that they received a 5% reduction to their general fund appropriation. And now going on to the ethnic councils, and this is important to note, if you're looking only at the general fund spreadsheet, it looks like they are not receiving funding for the biennium, but in fact the bill does provide funding, but from a special revenue fund that's created through a transfer from the CGIP insurance fund, and then the remainder in the campaign finance fund, and a small transfer from MMB. So they are receiving the same level, base level funding, but for the biennium it's from a special revenue fund and then would return to the general fund in the tails. The Historical Society receives a 4.2% increase, and this is for some funding for digital preservation and historic education, as well as some small increases to the Minnesota Military Museum, and also a one-time increase for Farm America. For the Minnesota State Arts Board, the funding is at base level, so no change. For the Humanities Commission, there's actually an increase of $1.4 million, and that's for a variety of member initiatives that include, excuse me while I find it in the detailed spreadsheet, it includes an operating increase that was Representative Erdahl's bill, $500,000 from Representative Capricia's bill for a grant to the Council on Economic Education, $500,000 for Chair Anderson's bill on healthy eating here at home, and then $250,000 for Representative Mariani's Everyone Wins reading program. Moving on to the various occupational boards, the Board of Accountancy, Architectural and Engineering, Cosmetologist Examiners, and Barber Examiners, those boards all received base funding with the small exception of an additional $10,000 for Representative Gunther's bill that dealt with examinations in the Board of Accountancy. The Human Rights Department has a 6% reduction. The contingent accounts has a 50% reduction from $500,000 to $250,000. The Minnesota State Retirement System is at the base level of $15.5 million for the biennium. And then the one change in the retirement aids is in the para-MRF retirement aid. You'll see a reduction of $36 million. Currently, the forecast for this program is $24 million per year, but we've received new information from PARA that says that the total funding needed for this program is $37 million per year from both the state and the city and employers. So this bill for this biennium only states that the state contribution would be $6 million per year. Moving on to military affairs, you'll see there's a net no change for on the operations of military affairs, but what the bill does is what the department and the governor recommended, which is a reallocation from the enlistment incentives base to primarily to the maintenance and training facilities for repair and maintenance of armories. And there, in addition, there's a $1.1 million one-time cancellation from the enlistment incentives carry forward account, and this is directed to be used for the military museum increase in the Historical Society, and then also for an increase in the veterans home funding. And finally, Veterans Affairs, you'll see that there's no change in the funding for veterans programs and services. There's a $1 million general fund increase for repair and betterment of the homes. But again, this is where there was a special revenue fund change where there's an additional $6.1 million that is provided from the special revenue fund to cover the operating adjustment for the veterans' home. So that doesn't show up in the general fund piece, but you'll see it as a special revenue item in the bill. And then again, just to summarize, the total spending for House File 495 is $902,638,000.
Okay, Representative Anderson, do you have any other presentation you want to make on the bill and any other part of the bill?
Mr. Chair, if you wish, I'll have Mr. Shepherd just go through the policy provisions and contained in the bill.
Okay, well, I don't know if we need a detailed review of every policy provision, Chair Anderson. I just want to make sure that, and I'm open to hearing what the DFL wants to hear on this too, but maybe the high level policies of things that are in the bill.
Mr. Chair, if the members wish, because this is just the Ways and Means Committee dealing with finance, we can forego that portion.
All right, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. And as you know, I don't sit on the committee, and I'm frankly not terribly familiar with this budget, but of course, the thing that just jumps out here to the uninitiated is all the cuts that you're making to state government. And as everybody knows, we have a $2 billion surplus this year, so I'm just really curious of what your overall theory is. I understand you get a target and that you have to meet your target, but, you know, I haven't heard anywhere that you fought the chair to, you know, change your target. I just would like you to give us an understanding of sort of what your overall thinking is about why you think we should make these cuts, some of which seem kind of significant in areas where I certainly wasn't aware that, you know, any of these agencies were out of line, especially, for example, I'm looking at the Campaign Finance and Disclosure Board that you're cutting, I think, by 10.7%, and some others. I'm just wondering if you could give us kind of your theory of why you're making all these cuts in this bill.
Well, let's do this. Members, I'm going to ask Chair Anderson to respond to that, Representative Liebling, but I think we'll have time to talk about the bill in its full in a little bit. I think if that's the case, let's let Chair Anderson respond to that, then we'll go to amendments, then we'll go on and debate the bill, and we can ask some more detailed questions.
Well, Mr. Chair, and just I'm not debating it. I'm just really asking for information about what she's what her theory is of what she's putting forward. It's
yeah,
kind of
and I'm saying I think let's have her answer that. But then I don't want to get into a big series of debates and discussion on the bill yet. I think I'd like to then do the amendments, then we'll get back to that subject. But Chair Anderson, can you respond to Representative Liebling?
Sure, Mr. Chair, and I will be brief. Representative Liebling, though the governor and I have some differences on some issues, the governor has said that he is looking to use this session to enact some real reform. And I am hopeful that he understands that state government needs to lead in that real reform efforts, and my bill does that. So this is about accommodating that, making some changes, and reprioritizing state government.
Okay. Well, members, Representative Liebling, I'll give you plenty of chances to ask more questions here in a little bit.
Okay.
But if we're done with the presentation of the bill, then why don't we go to the amendments? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, and I think that if I understood Representative correctly, she volunteered to comment about language items that might have a fiscal impact.
Mm-hmm.
And with our debate the other day, that probably sounds like maybe some good middle ground.
Sure. No, I'm happy to do that, Representative Carlson. I was just trying to...
I think she was volunteering, Mr. Chairman, to do that, and I think she can... I'm somewhat familiar with the bill because I happen to serve on her committee. Mm-hmm. I think she can probably do that pretty quickly, but I think members should have a heads up of what policy items may have a fiscal impact one way or the other.
Yeah. And I'm happy to have her do that, Representative Carlson. She initially had volunteered Mr. Shepard to what I thought was to go through every single policy item in the bill, and I wasn't sure that that was necessary, which is why I kind of talked to her about maybe doing a higher level overview. But I, you know, I guess Chair Anderson, if you could either have Mr. Shepard or yourself walk through the policy items in the bill that have some fiscal implications. Or other major items.
Sure. And that may be considered high level. I'm not sure.
We're
probably on the same page, I think.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Mr. Shepard, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Shepard from the House Research Department. So I'll quickly go through some of the items that have some fiscal impact, and I'll be starting in Article 2, which begins on page 22. There's a cluster of sections beginning with Section 2 relating to the legislative auditor that give him authority to do audits of economic development incentive programs and give him a role in the fiscal note process. That continues over to Section 6 on page 28. There is a series of provisions beginning on page 29, Sections 8 to 13, continuing over to page 33, that abolish the public subsidy program and the elections campaign account. So that has a fiscal impact. That continues over to page 33. There are provisions on sections 14 to 23, starting on page 33 and over to page 40, that relate to the rulemaking process. Some of those provisions have a fiscal impact, and there is language, there's a rider under the legislative auditor and some money there that relates to rulemaking. That continues over to page 40, Mr. Chair. Looking at other things that are likely to have, there are some provisions beginning on page 44, sections 25 to 29 that relate to Minnesota management budget. A provision that Chair Knobloch had relating to revenue uncertainty and budget forecasts that isn't a big spending item, but it relates to the overall budget, obviously. Beginning on page 46, sections 30 to 40 relate to the Commissioner of Administration. Among other things, these relate to giving notice of cost changes in construction projects. There are some provisions relating to administration of state grants and to a couple of provisions relating to administration of state purchasing programs. Beginning on page 52, six sections, continuing on page 60, that make several changes relating to the operation of the Office of Minute, the state's information technology office. Page 60, section 48, has a limit on full-time equivalent employees in the executive branch. There's a number of sections from sections 51 to 60, pages 63 to 70 that relate to military, temporary military licenses for active military members. Other things that have some moderate fiscal impact, as Ms. Roberts mentioned, there's a racing commission bill, begins on page 75, section 68 to 86, continuing to page 86, and there are some minor fiscal impacts in that bill. There is a bill beginning on around page 88 that the Secretary of State brought to the committee that also had some moderate fiscal impact in the form of some minor amendments to fees. There's a Board of Accountancy bill, again, that had moderate fiscal impact, beginning page 89, sections 94 to 103, continuing over to page 98. I'm just seeing if there's any other particular fiscal things I should point out at the end of the bill. Section 105 relates, and on page 105, sections 113, 114, limits on agency head salary increases. There's limits on the bottom of page 107 and 108 on increases in managerial compensation, limits on expenditures of advertising and parking ramp financing all have fiscal impact. And, Mr. Chair, that's an overview of those provisions.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Well, members, let's first go to amendments then. I think the first amendment I'll take up in order here is the A2 amendment. Chair Anderson moves the A2 amendment. Chair Anderson to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a provision that's going to be carried in the Health and Human Services bill. What it does is it requires that MNSHR, removing their exemption from MINUTE. This was a bill authored by Representative Kahn, and we're just making sure that it's part of the HHS bill and not having it here. And so that's the change.
Discussion of the A2 amendment. All right, see no discussion. All in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Chair Anderson, let's go to the A3 amendment. I think this is your amendment, Chair Anderson.
It is, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson moves the A3 amendment. To the amendment, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, it was our intent all along to make sure on the advertising cap that it did not apply to Explore Minnesota. This just makes it clear in the bill.
Discussion to the A3 amendment. Seeing no discussion. All in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Next, members, we have the A7 amendment. Representative Anderson moves the A7 amendment to the amendment. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of these are in response to feedback that we've gotten since our bill has been posted. One of them is dealing with the minute changes and making sure that we're addressing some county concerns, so we fix the county concerns as part of this. We also have two amendments that were adopted by the Senate yesterday that are part of this. One is sets fee increases can go no higher than 10% without legislative approval. That was adopted by the Senate yesterday. Another one adopted by the Senate on a 61-4 vote bans public subsidy of a soccer stadium. That's part of this amendment as well. And then the fourth item just has the managerial plan conform to the commissioner plan. And that's it in a nutshell.
Okay, is there discussion on this? Otherwise, members, I'm going to take the vote and then temporarily recess for taxes. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, with that vote coming up and several of us on taxes, I probably won't say all that I was going to say, but I do have some concerns about this particular amendment. I understand the goal of the 10%, but what came to my mind when you use the percentage, if you had a relatively small fee and it was a very modest dollar increase, it could easily reach 10%. I think I understand the goal is, you know, if you have a major, very expensive fee of some type, than 10%, you're talking about some significant dollars. So my point on that would be perhaps Representative Anderson can look at that as it moves forward and see if there's a way to kind of accommodate that. I don't know that we want every tiny little fee simply because it's a couple of bucks and it triggers legislative action. I think we'd have an awful lot of work to do in the legislature if that were the case. So I'm assuming that what she's referring to here are major dollar increases in fees, and maybe that can be talked about as the amendment or bill moves forward. But in light of the fact that you do want to recess, maybe we can, when the bill is up, talk further about some things in the amendment, because we do have to get down to vote on taxes.
Okay, members, I'm going to, at this time, temporarily recess the committee until the tax committee vote has been taken, and then we will. And for members to get back here, I know there was one individual, at least, that had requested to testify. I believe her name was Betty. Is she still here? Okay. Or else Hector Garcia. Mr. Garcia, could you come forward? Mr. Garcia, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Chair Novak and members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to say very briefly, we had intended on submitting an amendment. We ran out of time, but it'll be submitted later on. I just wanted to reiterate our great interest in supporting the reform efforts in this bill relating to our councils, but just to note that we believe that a collaborative effort to reflect on the implications of the changes that are being recommended be considered, especially when we do submit the amendment later on, for the following reasons. One, that dividing the staff from the community members does not seem a wise decision, since the very reason for the council's creation was to integrate the community into the process of government. And that seems to be counter to that purpose. The other thing is that being members, employees of the executive branch, it doesn't make sense to me that we should be placed under the legislative branch and under an entity that knows nothing about our communities. I think we could make by far more progress, continue to make progress in what we have been doing by collaborating with the different commissioners who were asked by Governor Dayton to work with us. Why is that important? Because I am convinced that the disparities which are afflicting Minnesota between the majority and the minority communities are due not to lack of legislation, not to lack of funding, but to the execution of the laws and the channeling of those funds, which are not reaching the persons who really need help. And so with that, I will close by saying that we have made tremendous progress in Rochester in a pilot project that we have been carrying out with the support of Mayor Brady, Gary Smith from Economic Development, Miller, the head of the Chamber of Commerce, with the university, with the college, with the superintendent of schools, who is now a chair of our board, Mike Munoz, as well as with surrounding cities like Austin, who have been receptive to the ideas that we have brought their way, one of them being the Torch program, which made Latino graduation rate from high school go from 37% to 100% in 7 years. I won't take more of your time, but I would just like the opportunity for a consultation among all stakeholders to reach a truly democratic conclusion on the reform that does need to be made, as I had suggested to the OLA back in 2010. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Members, we were on the A7 amendment when we recessed, and I wanted to take testimony from someone who had requested it, and we've now taken testimony from all the people that have requested at least before the start of the meeting. If I have time, I'll try to take any more that people have. But members, let's go back to the A7 amendment. Representative Carlson, I know we had kind of an abbreviated discussion of it. Did you have anything else you wanted to say on the A7 amendment?
Well, I did have that concern about the first section, as I mentioned, just as a quick reminder, when you deal with percentages, that maybe if the amendment goes on, that could be looked at. My concern was, in part, just the number of fees that would ultimately end up going through the legislature that would be relatively small fees, but because a percentage would generate, or a small dollar amount might generate a 10%, and therefore we'd get a lot of fees through. The intent, and I understand that that's already on in the Senate, so that's probably a conference committee discussion one way or the other anyway. The minute that I understand Representative Anderson is clean up, and then there's the soccer stadium, and like some that have been quoted in the paper, I'd probably put myself in the category of stadium fatigue, I think is the term that some have used. Representative Anderson, the governor has stated that he might be open, and I'm not sure what my position might be, but that he would be open to things that we might do for any other business, for example, a freeway exit ramp or something like that for access. As I read this, I think that some of those things that you might do for any other business would be prohibited. And maybe Representative Anderson might comment on that. It's my understanding that the potential owners have indicated they would build the actual stadium with private dollars. So the question would be infrastructure, I guess, is what may or may not end up being on the table. And like I say, I haven't firmly formulated a position yet on stadiums other than I do agree that there is a certain stadium fatigue. I think you were lucky, Mr. Chairman, you weren't here for the last go-around, but...
Well, Chair Carlson, I had plenty of them before.
But I know. So at any rate, that, I guess, will have to be the judgment as the bill moves forward, if the amendment goes on, as to whether we would want to deny a basic infrastructure or not. Being that the stadium itself is going to be privately financed. But I'll stop there.
Okay, I've got Representative Mahoney and Nornes.
I did ask for her interpretation, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Whether this would block basic infrastructure like an exit ramp or whatever, and I have no idea what's needed down at that site. I know the site, but I have no idea what infrastructure may or may not be needed.
Chair Anderson. I notice it says construction of a new Major League Soccer stadium. I guess, is it your view or interpretation that that would prohibit a, say, a road being built, you know, to or near the stadium site? Representative Chair Anderson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, Mr. Shepherd has informed me that he, it's his interpretation that it wouldn't block an infrastructure type expenditure. This is just something that's directly related to the stadium itself. And as for your comments on the fees, happy to work with you on that as it moves forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that clarifies it then, because the stadium, they're planning to build it for private dollars anyway, I guess, and if infrastructure would be covered, then I guess it becomes an issue that needs to be worked on later, but this wouldn't necessarily block that discussion.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I had some of the same concerns with the fee. Anyone who's been a fiscal chair understands that sometimes a couple dollar fee, you don't really want to waste or spend a lot of time in committee going over it. So I it's nice to hear that you're willing to take a look at that and talk with some members about that. I also have some concerns about the stadium piece to this, and I'm grateful that Chair Anderson spoke that it wouldn't suffer through prohibiting normal infrastructure, because we have infrastructure priorities that come to us, and we have to make decisions all the time, whether it's a on-off ramp on Highway 52 or Highway 2 or wherever, because communities should have the ability to talk with the developers of anything that's going on, whether it's the construction of a plant, you know, a manufacturing plant or a soccer stadium, you know. And I am such a champion of Minneapolis, everyone knows and understands that. So it's a little odd for me to say this, but I just think it's a bad policy to shut something down by amendment that the Speaker of the House and the tax chair could easily shut off without having to put it in paper and basically say to, well, this is actually saying to the developers of a soccer stadium that don't bother to come to the state to talk to us. That's exactly what it's saying. And I'm not a big soccer fan. I tried to coach it once, and the kids decided to get rid of me. But so it'll be interesting to see where it goes. And, again, I'm always happy to champion Minneapolis.
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm not a soccer fan either, but I did vote for every other stadium that we've built in the state. So I'm not proposing we build another one, but I am supportive of the idea that it does create business, and there are people that really are into that sport, and we need to provide that as well as hockey and everything else. But I guess my concern on the amendment is basically just four words on line 2.13, and that's where we're talking about tax expenditures, which I assume could be exempting sales tax or something on material. I just think that maybe it's premature to be stating that already. Nothing has been requested as far as I know. But I would hope that at least be open to presentation by someone that maybe could convince us that there is some help available without actual state funds going in. So that would be my presentation, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if it's in order to delete those four words or what the committee would wish to do. So,
Representative Mahoney, to this point?
Well, I was wondering if Representative Nornes would yield. I'm just trying to find out if he's suffering the same kind of stadium fatigue that I am.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm slowly getting over it.
Mr. Chair?
Chair Anderson.
This has been a helpful conversation. We do have some lobbyists here that represent the soccer stadium folks. But I will tell you, the person that said the stadium fatigue, as I recall, was Governor Dayton. Both the leaders of the House and Senate have inkled that they have stadium fatigue as well. This provision was passed in the Senate 61-4, and that's why we have it here as part of an amendment here today.
All right. Let's see. I had Representative Liebling, and then if you wish, we'll take a statement from the representative of the stadium. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment has several different things in it, obviously, and I'd like to bring us back to the first part of the amendment about the fee increases. I find the language of this amendment really strange, because looking at the amendment, current law already says that an executive branch state agency may not impose a new fee or increase an existing fee unless it's approved by law. And then the added language says an agency must not propose a fee or fine increase of more than 10%. So I find it very strange that what this part of the amendment actually does is say they can't even propose it. I don't know why we would say that. I mean, you would almost wonder whether doesn't the governor and his agency have a right to at least come to the come to the legislature and propose something? We're going to forbid that by law when it's already under this current law they're not allowed to increase a fee. So I just find that extremely strange, members. I don't know what was intended here. I almost want to say this looks like a First Amendment violation here. We're going to tell people they're not allowed to propose something. So anxious to hear about the soccer stadium piece, but I just find that piece completely bizarre.
Okay, and members, I would like to be able to wrap this up before we start in session, if we can. But to the amendment, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I've strongly opposed not necessarily all public funding for stadiums, but, you know, the fact that the state was providing most of it. You know, I've been on GovOps when we did the Twins and the Vikings, and I opposed both of those. But, you know, I opposed the fact that these private interests were asking the state for something like 75%. So the irony here is that now we have someone coming in, it's reversed. You know, I think this is going to be 75% or more privately financed. And so, you know, I'm kind of with Representative Carlson. I mean, this is a relatively new issue, and, you know, if we're going to do something, it should go through a process, through the committee process, not dumped on us late in the game like this. But I got to tell you, I mean, if we had this type of proposal for the Twins and Vikings, I might have been able to support that. So I think that, you know, we should be open to the fact that we have someone coming in who, and we'll ask the proposers if they come, you know, what percent total are you willing to put in as a private entity? And if it's up in that 75 to 80% range, which is what I advocated for the Twins and Vikings, I think it could be a reasonable proposal.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson, I'm just trying to really get a sense back on this fee piece. I'm fine with whatever else is in here, but I really want to talk about the fee piece. Is it your intention to not allow anyone to propose a new fee to the legislature?
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hillstrom. This was language that the Senate passed yesterday on a voice floor vote. Representative Carlson has asked some questions about it. I think there's lots of room for improvement on this language and help the Senate out. So welcome any suggestions that you have on it.
Representative Hillstrom, if I may, I don't think it refers to new fees. I think it just says that you can't increase an existing fee more than 10% is my reading of it, but Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's already current law, but on line 1.18, it says an agency must not propose a fee or fine increase, so they can't even propose it. And so that's my question. And Representative Anderson, one of the challenges with putting the language exactly as it is in the Senate, if it passes exactly the same, folks usually say all of the lines are similar, right, and let's adopt same or similar language. And so I want to make sure that we're not adopting same or similar language if we actually want to discuss whether or not we're allowing people to propose, because that's the word in the language.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Chair Anderson.
And Representative Hillstrom, I have the same interpretation as Representative Knobloch does. This bill still needs to go to the floor, too, so I'm working with Representative Carlson with any suggestions that he has for making this work better.
Well, members, why don't I recognize Mr. Carlson, who's at the witness stand, to provide some testimony. Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the professional Major League Soccer team currently existing in Minnesota. That's called Minnesota United. And I personally don't suffer from the stadium fatigue because I might be the only contract lobbyist in the building who's never worked on one. but you know, I want you to know soccer is the fastest growing sport in our country, and it was an honor for Minnesota to be selected over San Antonio, Sacramento, and Nevada in a very fierce competition. But after they were awarded the franchise, the team got together and they started meeting with the community to develop a plan to have a home to house this new team. And that plan came forward last Tuesday and Wednesday as they began to meet with leaders. And the plan, quite frankly, is this. They intend to privately own and construct a Major League Soccer facility in downtown Minneapolis without the help of any public funds, without the help of any sales tax dollars. It will create about 1,900 construction jobs and will employ hundreds once it's completed and generate in excess of $2.5 million of sales tax revenue to the state and city in Minneapolis. That is what their intention is, and that is why most of this amendment is not objectionable to us. There is no intention to use any state funds nor to incur any state debt for the construction of this facility, which, including the fee to join the league, is going to total about $250 million of private investment in the farmers market area in downtown Minneapolis. Our concern is with two words on lines 2.13, and that relates to tax expenditures. And tax expenditures, as David knows and others that I've worked on with these, can be any number of things, whether it's a sales tax exemption on construction materials, tax increment financing, other local development tools. And under 270C11, a tax expenditure, which are studied by the state to make sure that they are fulfilling their intended purpose and goal of economic development and other tools, we think that having that in there would foreclose even discussions with the city and county as it relates to their tax expenditures. We have no problem with any of the balance of the amendment. I prefer, it's nothing that we're asking for, so I can say I don't mind it because we're not asking for that. But I do worry about the unintended consequences of the word tax expenditures on line 2.13, and would ask that you would give some consideration to just removing that so that you can hear about what the economic development benefits there may be to the state and the community, and not foreclose either state or local tax expenditures that are granted to any number of projects around the state, and at least hear what they are. That's our only concern, Mr. Chairman. Happy to answer any questions about the project, or I'm not as well versed in soccer as everyone on the table seems to be, but happy to answer questions. But that's the only thing that we would ask you to do, Mr. Chairman, is to remove those two words.
All right, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Quickly, Mr. Chair and Mr. Carlson. So, as I said, you're doing what I had hoped the Vikings and Twins would have done. And I think that you, under this language, you could still have a sales tax from the city, exemption from the city or the county. Is that correct?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hornstein, I'm not so sure about that. When you look at what a tax expenditure is in 270C11 as it relates to general sales tax that apply locally, I think that's included in this language. I'm quite certain that the construction sales tax exemptions that you deal with routinely, and there are many in the bill this year, and one I'm working on with Representative Nornes, I'm certain that is covered. So you would be foreclosed from that as an economic development tool without question.
Okay, and then Mr. Chair, one.
Yeah, Representative Hornstein.
Quick follow-up then. So if in terms of your business plan or your construction plan, are you able to say at least approximately what percentage of private money and what percentage of public money you envision for the project?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, I take the approach that it is 100% private financing. As I view, and I think many would view, a sales tax exemption on a project that wouldn't exist, you're not giving up anything. That's not money going into the project per se. I believe if you took the $250 million project and took the, I believe it's estimated at about $2.8 million, it would be 99% privately financed if you counted that as taxpayer money going into the project.
Members, I've got our House counsel that has got a definition of tax expenditure that's in statute, since that seems to become have become an issue here. I wonder if Mr. Sullivan would read that definition of a tax expenditure.
So Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is from Section 270C.11, Subdivision 6. Tax expenditure means a tax provision which provides a gross income definition, deduction, exemption, credit, or rate for certain persons, types of income, transactions, or property that results in reduced tax revenue.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, with the discussion about the tax expenditure, and we have the chair of the tax committee here, got a two-part question. With those words in there, does that mean that bills should go through the tax committee, especially after that definition was just read? If this amendment goes on, would it have to go there? And secondly, what would be germane relative to taxes on the House floor? I know Representative David's watches references to taxes, as you and I both know, because we're on that committee very carefully. If he could yield to that question, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'm going to recognize Representative Davids, and I'm afraid I skipped over Representative Garofalo, so I got to come back to him. But Chair Davids, Chair of the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch, and to Chair Carlson. I'm just coming in here kind of the last few minutes here, so I need to look at it. Minutes here, so I need to look at it before I make any comments on it. So.
Chair, Representative Carlson.
It's a new issue for all of us, and as we just in the last few minutes got involved with the tax discussion, thought, well, maybe that's something that just kind of came to mind with the reading of that definition, but that may be something that we all need to think about as the bill moves forward. There's a germaneness issue on the House floor, or whether it's under House rules, an issue that should go to the Tax Committee.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I think what Representative Anderson is doing here is what any good chair does in advance of the House floor and going into conference committee, and that is she's equipping herself with as many positions as possible to have offensive and defensive positions in conference committee. And she represents Hennepin County, and regardless of individual subject matter, I think the wise move is to go into the conference committee with an aggressive position. You can always back off on this stuff, so I'm not really sure why everyone's getting wrapped around the axle on this. Obviously, when it comes to tax expenditures, I don't think anyone or the Senate intended for there to be that, you know, gasoline that's purchased on the construction site would now be subject to the state sales tax, because technically that's an exemption, that's a tax expenditure under current law. So certainly there's some work that can be done in conference committee, but I would just urge us to support Representative Anderson's amendment and move on with this.
Representative Carlson.
Sure, just very quickly, maybe I thought I heard Representative Anderson say that this amendment, and I assume it's the whole amendment that's before us, has already been adopted by the Senate. Am I correct on that, Representative Anderson?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, the provision on the soccer stadium was adopted by the Senate yesterday on a 61-4 vote.
So, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I would counter what Representative Garofalo has said. If it doesn't position her going into conference committee, you would have the same item.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I think you know this, that sometimes by having identical provisions, you actually have more leverage than if they're different. And you're an experienced conferee, you know that, and it's a trick I've used in the past and works out quite well.
You know, Chair Anderson, having heard the discussion and the issues surrounding the potential referral to tax committee, do you have any other comments you want to make on this, Chair Anderson?
I do, Mr. Chair. This section is actually in 16A. It doesn't relate to taxes. It would not need to go to the tax committee, so I'm not concerned about that. I've heard the testimony here today. I'd like to leave it as is and continue working on it as we move through the legislative process.
Chair Knobloch.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch. I think Chair Anderson has hit it right on the head at 16A, so I think we're okay. I do get a little touchy about this because I don't want to put any author sending stuff that has to do with taxes to the House floor because all sorts of things can start to happen that they don't want. But I think we're okay here. And I will talk to the tax staff and just get that verified down the road here. Thank you.
Well, you know, I wonder, Chair Davids, if I know we're winding down here and session might be delayed a minute or two, but I wonder, Chair Anderson, if you would withdraw your amendment quickly and just maybe you could call or you could call tax staff and get their interpretation, Chair Davids. And we do have one other amendment we could take up, and then we could come back and possibly deal with this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Chair Anderson, would you be willing to withdraw the A7 amendment temporarily?
Mr. Chair, I'll temporarily lay on the table. Hopefully that's the right terminology. I'll temporarily withdraw the A7 amendment.
Okay. A7 amendment is withdrawn. Representative Carlson moves the A25 amendment. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, this was a request by the Campaign Finance Board, and what they wanted to do was be able to complete their IT upgrade and to fit within the target. We cancel $150,000 this fiscal year and then reappropriate it. In visiting with Mr. Marks earlier today, it's my understanding that it would not violate the target, but it would give them a chance to complete their IT project. So that's the gist of the amendment, so they can complete the work.
That's my understanding, Representative Carlson. I've also talked to the Campaign Finance Board, and I'm in support of this amendment and would encourage members to vote for it. Chair Anderson, any comments on the A25 amendment?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. All in favor of the A25 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A25 amendment is adopted. All right. While we're waiting for Chair Davids to get back to us, I don't think there are any other amendments, so let's go to discussion to the bill. Discussion to the bill. And we can go, and we'll take up the A7 amendment again here when Chair Davids is back with us. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, in light of the time, but we do have to, I guess, wait a few minutes for him to get back. Literally going back to the budget resolution, I expressed concerns about the funding level here. This is not a percentage that's quite as high as the percentage for Health and Human Services, which was at, if I recall, something like 10%, but it is one of the higher percentage reductions. So I'm concerned about the overall steep cuts that are in the bill as a result of the House budget resolution. There are a couple of things that I do want to point out. We did have some discussion when we were in committee about the funding for MRF, that's the Public Employee Retirement Plan for Civil Service Workers in Minneapolis, and that would impact on the city, the school district, and maybe a couple of other entities that would have people who are a part of the civil service within the city. And it's my understanding that there's a problem of about $4 million as a result of this particular provision, because it is a closed plan. All new hires are going into PERA. So I would just point out that there is an issue there. And another issue is the group insurance program for state employees, or what we commonly call CGIP. And there is money being used there in the bill that's unrelated to their health insurance. And you can have a pretty good discussion about exactly whose money that is, because employees have paid into that insurance fund. They try to have, if I recall, like a 15% reserve. It's now as high as 18. And that would bring it this bill would bring it back down to the 15. But it's the use of the money that's the issue, and who has contributed into the fund, the employer and the employee. So that's something that I find problematic. And, Mr. Chairman, we have the request by the administration that there be a 1.8% increase to cover what I'll call inflationary costs. That would be whatever the collective bargaining agreements yield, plus whatever increases there might be in health insurance. And it's my understanding that that 1.8% is being covered in some committees. And it's not being covered in this bill. So I think there's also the discussion of equity across public employees in terms of which bill they happen to come under. I think the bill we had up yesterday, the 1.8% is covered, and maybe Representative Cornish can say yes or no, but if I recall when the bill was presented, I thought it was. And then, Mr. Chairman, there is a relatively small constituency for my next comment, but that's the House budget cuts. And if those cuts were to take place, that would be the equivalent of 13 employees here in the Minnesota House. Now, that was an issue that came out of the Rules Committee, but we do provide a service to a very large constituency. And when we reduce the number of House employees, and I understand that there may be a few other issues that they can bring to the table to try to make that adjustment, but none of them would get us there without dealing with the overall complement. So maybe other restrictions, travel or whatever, might reduce that from 13 to a lower number, but it's my understanding of looking at that part of the budget that there would still be employee reductions as a result of that part of the bill. There is the issue of the campaign finance board's budget, and I guess now that my good friend Representative Kahn isn't here, but looking around the table, we're probably the only two when that was originally passed in the early 1970s, and the idea of the that was to allow for more of the average citizens to participate in the political process through campaign contributions. And we did make some adjustments in that regard when we had some financial difficulties, but that's not the case right now. In the bill, there's limit on the number of state employees overall. And, you know, one of the questions there is that our national ranking, we have fewer public employees per 1,000 than the vast majority of the states. I think I can almost say probably almost all of them would have more employees per 1,000 than we do. But we are a state where our population continues to grow. And so having that cap, I find problematic there as well. And then there's the salary issue that's surfaced. And one of those salary issues, and we've had discussion of that in this committee before, is the Metropolitan Council. And the issue there that I'm not sure everyone understands, I'm sure the author of the bill does, and probably members of this committee because we had that discussion, but the position of chair of the Metropolitan Council has evolved from part-time to full-time, and that was a big reason for at least part of that salary adjustment. So, Mr. Chairman, the overall, the reduction of $67,412,000 from the February forecast, or a 6.7% reduction, I felt from the very beginning was unduly harsh relative to the operations of state government. And so I know we've got the amendment to adopt, and I see the chair of taxes is back, so we've taken enough time for him to get the answer to the other questions, so we're going to deal with the amendment, but I would encourage a no vote on the bill.
Members, before I go to Chair Davids, Representative Cornish has raised his hand, I guess maybe to the point of something that Representative Carlson said. Did you have something you wanted to say, Representative Cornish?
Yeah, just real quickly, the wage negotiation and pay can vary in different committees. Even the governor, sometimes he designates salary subs, sometimes he doesn't. And this one, he had 1.8 in, and then he had 5% for the judges. And typically, the state does a pattern bargaining anyway. Whether it's 2.5 or 3%, whether it's at the Council 6, engineers, MLEA, all the different unions, and they usually have a bargain pretty much all the same, and whatever the government puts in, usually falls short and they have to take it out of the expenditure. So it's a real conglomeration. That's why some of the committees treat it differently.
Okay. Chair Davids, if I can recognize you, do you have, haven't had a chance to look at the A7 amendment? Do you have something to report back to us on whether it would have to go to the tax committee or not, or anything else you want to say, sir?
Yes, I do, Chair Knobloch. I was glad to go up there because the entire tax staff was having lunch in the break room, and it was quite delicious, actually. In consulting with tax staff, nonpartisan tax staff, they were very clear that this would not need to come to tax committee, and the reason being is because it's more of a definition. We're not changing anything to do with tax expenditures per se, but we're just referring to the word tax expenditures. So Joel Michael and others were very clear that this would not cause a bill to go to tax committee. That's my report from the nonpartisan House research.
All right. Well, with that, Representative Anderson moves the A7 amendment. Other discussion to the A7 amendment? And members, I think they are waiting for us, but any other discussion to the A7 amendment, which we had discussed some before? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I know you're in the same situation I am, that we've been in taxes at the same time as Ways and Means, and so I apologize. But Chair Anderson, with all due respect to Representative Chair Davids, I do think this will make tax expenditure amendments germane on the House floor. But Chair Anderson, you are on the tax committee. We were just voting, and can you tell me why you didn't offer this to the omnibus tax bill that we just were taking up, this tax provision?
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lincheski. You perhaps missed this because we've been in and out of different committees, but this actually was passed in the Senate to the state government finance bill yesterday, passed in a 61-4 vote, and I'm just looking at provisions that we can agree on, and this is one of them.
Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like I'm in late. Apologize, and it sounds like people's minds are made up here, and I won't change anyone on that, but it is tax expenditure language making, and by the way, the omnibus tax bill has all kinds of new tax expenditures, so they will be germane when we vote on the state gov finance bill on the House floor. But I agree with you, Chair Anderson. You and I have had the same sets of votes on financing stadiums, and so philosophically I hear what you're saying, but the fact that the Senate did something, I don't know if that really should be what we follow. I mean, they just do all kinds of things in the wrong committees, in my estimation. But I think this is, you guys have already made your decision, but I would just hope, and I think I can, I know Chair Davids will keep his eye on this in the tax conference committee, because my guess is that this is going to get discussed, and I sure hope it won't be the state of finance folks who will figure out the review of tax subsidies for another stadium. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. See, no, Representative Carlson.
Very quickly, I was the one that had requested an answer from Representative Cornish, but I think we all understand that the collective bargaining agreements can vary. That isn't my point, because there isn't anything at all in here as opposed to that particular bill and perhaps others. The other question, or the comment very quickly, is the health insurance rates would be the same across all state employees, whether they're covered by this bill or some other bill, because that's one contract for the state employees. But I'll just stop there because we've got to get across the street. But thank you.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A7 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
A motion prevails. The A7 amendment is adopted. Chair Anderson, any last words to the bill as amended?
Just ask for your support.
All right. Then, members, Representative Anderson renews her motion that Senate File 888, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senate File 888, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Members, we are adjourned.